The theater, the theater.
Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
What's up, crew?
What up, crew?
Oh,
hello.
So,
this week marks an exciting occasion. We do this often, but we haven't in a while.
I know. This is our first one in a while.
I guess at this point, we will have done it already. But we can
once this
talk
comes
about.
Out, true, we will yeah. have yes. done it already. Yes. But I'm just saying it because we're recording this in advance. But
yes.
I have to ask before I say what we're doing. Roddy, are you into the Marvel Cinematic Universe? At all?
Yeah, I was. I'm not super. I'm not super up to date with what's going on now.
When was the fall off point for you? After Endgame or pre Endgame?
No. I think it was around like WandaVision / Spider-Man, the last Spider-Man.
Yeah. Got it. Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. That makes sense. Totally makes sense. We are staying with it right now.
Oh,
any of us. We are doing our best.
Troopers. Okay.
We have our moments of problems. You know, there are problems obviously happening, but we've been sticking with it, the three of us. We've been doing a good job of like staying up to date. I just did a whole timeline rewatch where you like watch it from the first Avenger all the way through, you know, like
that's a lot of time.
Timeline. Yeah, I spent a lot of time.
That's a lot of time.
I included WandaVision, Loki, Falcon, all of it. I'm still in it. I just finished Eternals.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. But we are seeing the Marvels.
I'm excited about the Marvels personally.
And we are very excited about
yeah.
it.
And yeah. we're having dinner before.
And we're having
we're
dinner
doing
before.
Dinner.
Aw. Yeah.
I'm going to wear pajamas. I can't
yeah.
wait.
Yeah.
What? I'm going to go out to a public place, CJ.
They'll yeah. be appropriate.
Yeah, it's like pajama chic, you know?
Yes.
It's like
it's not lingerie.
Pajama
my
chic.
Titties aren't going to be hanging out or anything.
Well, mine
although
will be.
Here it would be fine, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, in LA, everyone's,
yeah,
everyone's cool with it. Everyone's cool with it. That's my segue. Welcome to Theater Theater. The theater
wow.
podcast. Titties. CJ's titties.
CJ's.
Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
It's true. And each week, we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And we're back again this week with part two of our mini-series discussing, celebrating, honoring, covering the works of Roddy Viegas, who is here once again with us in studio. I mean, Zoom. We're on Zoom.
In Zoomio.
Roddy's at
home. In Zoom, Zoomio.
Yeah. Roddy's a writer, producer, designer, director, genius, extraordinaire, theater maker of all sorts, local to LA, founding member of Zani Theatrics, and the winner of our Theater Theater Playwright Award at Hollywood Fringe Fest 2023. How you doing, Roddy?
Good, good. Oh, I want to shout this out because at the awards night, CJ gave me a plaque, and I love that plaque. I think it's very beautiful. I think it's very nice. It's in my living room. I love it dearly. I think it's very cute.
Yeah,
I love
I'm glad
that.
Glad you like it.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it was. You can Venmo us the $700.
It was $700. It was made by hand. Kidding.
Oh,
it's
made
by Ethiopian
filthy
80-year-old man. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Those are fucking liars.
Not true. It's not true. It was fair trade, though. you know, you're the winner of this award, but it also Inferno has won other things. You won there was another Fringe.
So it won the San Diego Fringe pick. I'm blanking on what the specific title is.
Right.
But and I should definitely email them and be like, "Hey, how's it going to work?" But to my knowledge, it's an invitation to bring Inferno to the San Diego Fringe, which will happen in May if all goes well. That's when it normally happens. And then I guess concurrently, we'll be working on one or two Fringe shows and trying
Sweet.
To bring more stuff to Fringe.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Okay. Well, I want to know, as an artist, a little bit more about you. Now, these are things that we're obsessed with on this podcast. These are things that I ask everyone who comes on, but also, like, I'm constantly, we're reiterating to each other the answers to these questions, but also sometimes they change, you know, as all good things do. I need to know from you, Roddy, what is your favorite play?
Yes. So I think my favorite play that I adore it. Everybody by Brandon Jacob Jenkins, which you guys covered.
Yes.
I was thrilled. But I think Brandon Jacob Jenkins is a phenomenal writer. I think I've seen the play. I've read it. I've been lucky enough to be an assistant director on a production of it. And
oh, cool.
I adored it through and through. I am.
Did
briefly,
you see it when it was at Antillas?
No, I missed it. That was around the same time I was working on it. I was just like in the throes of it.
Wow.
But I was so excited. And no, I saw it back in, it must have been like 2016. I was up in the Bay Area and I saw it at the, that outdoor theater space that they have that I'm blanking on. It's like the Shakespeare, California Shakespeare Center?
Mm.
Cal,
oh,
Shakes?
Sure,
Cal Shakes?
Cal
Shakes.
Cal Shakes. Shakes.
Yes. And adored that production. And so when I found out we were going to be doing it at CSUN, which is where I graduated from, I was like, I'd love to be a part of this project in any way. And I was like, please let me have the Dance Macabre scene. Like, that's, if there's anything I want to have my fingers in. And I don't know why, but I've in my directing experience, have done groups of like 9 or 14. And I'm just so done with directing large groups of people. It's too much. And I am not like, I love music. I love incorporating music into shows. I'm not musically inclined. I love incorporating dance. I'm not choreography. Like, my brain doesn't work that way, but I adore it. And so I bring in those elements, and sometimes they're like, what count do we start off? And I'm like, what is a count? That is a great question. But that was a real
one,
roller coaster.
Ha,
yeah, exactly.
Ooh, that's a count.
Right.
That was funny. Come on, guys. Give me
yeah. I got you. I got you.
I watch a lot of Sesame Street right
Sesame
now.
Sesame Street.
You're got a bird.
Right?
Yeah.
But that was a rewarding experience doing the Dance Macabre and figuring that out, because that was not without its troubles. I'm like, this also goes into what else I love. I adore dramaturgy and being a dramaturg and just researching anything that the play connects to. So for that, I made a binder, like a 30-page dramaturgy packet about breaking down everybody and breaking down like. Specifically, like, when it came to the Dance Macabre, what is the Dance Macabre? And it really was the impetus to, like, the idea of, oh, of any class, any status, you will all die, and, like, you'll all be in that one place, in that one position. And so we had this...
Roddy loves death.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And I have a feeling with the next show script we're going to cover, we'll get into that more.
Would you say that Brandon Jacob Jenkins, Heimer Smith, is your favorite playwright?
I
or who is your
know.
Favorite playwright?
So I love reading plays. I don't read books often enough as I should,
yeah.
Unless I'm researching. But like in the back, there is my little play folder or play shelf. And then you'll see that there are some plays here that I like. I was like, I got to get all of the dramatist plays, and there's so many. But like, try to make a rainbow out of them, and I thought that was cute. But I was like, I need to read so many of them. But yeah, Brandon Jacob Jenkins, I think, is up there, as well as like Lisa Faro, who just had a production at Latino Theater Company and I missed. So now I'm like, whenever The Travelers comes out into publication, I'm gonna have to read that. But yeah, I
got great reviews.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And then Christopher Durang is a friend of mine's favorite, and I started reading all of his work, and I really fell in love with some of his plays. I think some of them are amazing.
Yeah.
We did. Durang was, I think, the third or fourth playwright.
Yeah, he was
covered
in the first, he was in the first season.
Yeah. I like Durang a lot. I don't love Beyond Therapy, but I do love For Whom the Southern Bell Tolls. You know what I mean? Like, there's a back and forth for me with Durang. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike.
Yes.
Same. Okay. I adored that script.
Yeah.
Favorite movie?
This is tricky. I think Oh, okay. So I was asked this question recently, and I didn't give one answer. I gave three, so I'll just give you three.
Yeah.
Because I love The Grand Budapest Hotel by Wes Anderson.
Sure, yeah.
I love Clue, the movie. Makes me
I
laugh.
am a singing telegram. Boom! Is the
Iconic.
top-tier comedy. Yeah.
I remember doing, I don't think the rights were out yet, but I was at a small enough high school where I was like, what if we just put on the movie? And no,
Let's just do
and
it.
at the time, nobody was like, does that need rights? Is that no questions were asked. They're like, yeah, let's just do it. And I was like, sure. And so I played a version of Colonel Mustard. It was also one of the first times I was like given the opportunity to like design a set. And I remember building, because it's high school and we had like we didn't have the biggest of budgets, but we had enough to like make some canvas flats, and we kind of painted the walls and things and designing that. So that was a ton of fun. I know you asked me movies and I immediately pivoted back to plays,
It's what we
which is
do. Yeah, I
great.
get that.
Yeah. But you know what? Maybe I'll just leave with Grand Budapest Hotel and Clue, because I do love both of those.
Nice.
All
Great
right.
choices. Great choices. Have you seen Asteroid City, the new
I
Wes Anderson?
haven't yet. I really want to. I've been a little busy to not see it, but it's on my list. It's on like the
It
top of my
is
list.
all I will
It's
say.
pretty great.
It's pretty great. And
Yeah. Oh.
it is what if Wes Anderson
Was a
put
Brecht
theater on
boy.
film?
Oh,
And
I'm
that's
so
it.
excited.
And Brecht.
It's very Brecht. You'll
Yeah.
see. It's very good. It's very fun, very theater. And Jason Schwartzman's fucking everyone's great in
I
it,
want to
but
marry
I want to
him.
kiss his butt. Which is also his mouth. Sorry.
Yes.
Mouths and
Mouths and
butts are the
butts are
same
the
thing.
same thing.
So
They
I
are indeed.
I was being I'm being redundant by telling you that, but
Yeah.
because it's obvious.
Yes.
Okay, so Roddy, I'm sorry to fill your episode with terrible, terrible bits that won't make sense to anybody who hasn't listened since, 4 years ago. But we want to start by talking about your play that you sent us. You did say that this was your first full-length play,
Yes.
but then you clarified technically there's another one, but we don't talk about it. But you did tell me,
Absolutely.
so now I have to ask you about
I
it.
know.
What was the first play?
As I sent that, I was like, I think I'm gonna have to talk about the
You're
first
gonna have to
one.
talk about it now.
Yes.
Because it's first full length, because there are shorter versions of Death Inc. Death Inc. has had a very long journey,
Sure.
which is why it constantly torments me. But the play before it only had about a week where I was just writing. I was like, let me try to write a comedy, which I haven't tried to, like a pure comedy, which I haven't tried to write since, which is a larger conversation about why. But it was called, I believe it was called like A Louisiana Parable. It's about these guys who are stealing from, it's a very like, it was just a fluff comedy that I was like, oh, this is goofy. This is funny, I guess. And like, oh, it's these guys trying to steal from this rich family, and they procure the assistance of a witch who isn't a witch, but then turns out to be a witch. Oh my God. And I have not read it since. I don't know if I'll read it, but it was one of those things that I was like, okay, let me try to see if I can produce this, because I don't think I have, well, I've been told this. I should phrase it this way. I've been told that I don't have. I thankfully don't have a big ego, but I have a lot of audacity.
That's healthy. That's healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's healthy when you're producing because you're like, yeah, I'll try to produce. I'll try to do that.
Sure.
And that was a piece I tried to produce within CSUN. So like, I learned a lot in like, oh, here's the steps that need to be taken. And although it never got produced. Which I'm very, very glad, because who knows what that piece would have looked like.
Now with the digital footprint, you don't want to leave too many things behind, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That you're not super proud of, yeah.
Right? But that did help me a little bit and learn about, like, okay, he similar steps that I need to take to Death Inc., even if Death Inc. was a slightly bigger behemoth of
Yeah.
unto itself. But yeah.
So then you write Death Inc. So Death Inc. or DEATH Inc.
Yes.
What does that stand for?
Oh, you're asking the hard-hitting questions. I have it spelled out here. Okay, because in the world of Death Inc., there are it's what if death was run by a bunch of bureaucrats. I don't I hope I'm not stealing a breakdown,
Well,
but
you might be. Maybe we should start there.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
Bring it.
CJ.
Yes.
Are you okay?
No.
Oh.
Seems like you might be having some trouble over there.
You want to talk about it?
Yes. About it. Have a little bit of a have a little tantrum and break it down.
CJ's breakdown. Death Inc. is the office-style plane of transition between life and death. All who pass must be processed through the system, be accounted for, explain how they got there, and have their memories wiped before moving to the great beyond. But what happens when management shows up and wants to impose and then monitor a couple clients, one difficult and one mysterious? Mm-hmm. Whoop.
Death Inc.
Yes.
So I watched the video.
Oh boy!
First,
okay.
Yep. Because you said that was first.
It is first because it. So okay. To answer your first question, Death Inc. Yeah. If I can remember, its distribution is D. I can't remember E. A is accounting. T is. Oh, E is elimination.
He is elimination.
Oh, yeah. The memory elimination.
Uh-huh. Right. H is human resources, and T is time.
Time.
T is okay. Yes, time record.
There you go.
So now we're in another. Now you play with time a lot. You like time.
But do
you? Maybe you don't like time. I think maybe is the better way to say it. Both of these plays, the first one, you're like, time doesn't matter. I don't fucking care. But it's right now. If you have to set it somewhere, it's right now. And in this one, you're like, no, time doesn't exist in this realm. And that automatically puts me in the mindset of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which currently we're dealing with Loki season 2. And Loki is all about the TVA, which is right. A timeless place where all of the time, the timelines are kept, the sacred timeline specifically is kept safe. Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know anything else about that unless you're a total nerd like us and you're super into it. Ki Hui Kwan is killing this season.
Oh my God, he's so good.
I saw the first and I do want to see the second of that because it does seem
really
fun.
It's a good time. It's a good time. But he, right away, I'm there. I'm because I'm so in that right now. I'm so in that Loki world right now that I was like, oh shit. Like, I love stuff that takes place out of time. I love things that take place sort of in a. It's a realm that we understand because it's like corporate America, but it's also outside of our understanding of reality at the same time. Those things are always exciting for me. Another thing that reminded me of was Severance. Have you all watched Severance?
Yes. Very good.
That.
Yeah.
Except everyone knows why they're there. Whereas in Severance, no one really knows why they are where they are. Mm-hmm. But I was getting a lot of that. And those things excite me. Whereas Inferno is so theatrical and so unhinged and whatever. And this is so precise and so... Mm-hmm. Cold in the right way, in a good way.
A little bit of range, dare I say?
Yeah. So you prove some range while still fucking with the same thematics, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah. Aw, thank you. Yeah, because it's a lot of fun. In the earlier versions of the script, because sometimes the script just looks too long, and I'm like, I love all of my stage directions, which are not stage directions. It's just me talking. I've shown plays to like friends and things, and they say, you're writing these stage directions, who are they for? And after like thinking about that question, I was like, oh, I'm writing for the people that are reading the play, not the people that are putting on the play, because I just like it. And so a lot of Death Inc. had like some more conversational stage directions, to excessive amounts. At one point it was just a page of this, and I was like, this is disrupting the flow. I cannot indulge this much. But talking about time, it was like time does not exist. It was one of like the settings, and it continually popped up in every single scene. And what I love about it, and I don't think it's in the version that it is now, it exists, is time does not exist was the first setting. And then after every single scene, it's like time has never existed. Time doesn't mean anything. And it just got longer and longer and longer. It's like, stop talking about time. Time doesn't matter. And I did love that. But I also love that, and this is something like you realize something when you revise it every single time. And the production that we did 2019 must have been version 7 or something. And now we're on version, or I'm on version 13, as I've just been like once in a while revisiting it and sometimes making minor changes to major changes. And I just really love this idea that like time doesn't exist. And for some reason, all of these people feel like their life is on the line and the clock is ticking, even if there isn't a clock.
Yeah.
Which I thought was always really fun, which harkens back to like, and when you ask what every letter stands for in Death Inc., it's, was my clever way of coming up with characters, because every single letter is embodied by a character who runs that department.
Right.
It was fun to try to work with them and figure that out. But those characters, again, they never came in until the massive piece that I would like, the first full-length piece. Originally, Death Inc. started as a one-act, like, three-scene show with just Barbara. Barbara and some living person. And Barbara is Death's secretary in the play. And I fell in love with this character, and I wrote so much for this character. I wrote them into other scenes and little spin-offs to try to understand this character. And finally, I was like, I want to expand upon the whole world, because I really do love world building. And it's very apparent in this script, to sometimes the detriment of like other characters. But hopefully I'm fixing that. But so as I started to build the world out, Barbara was kind of the impetus of the rest of the world and how it would operate. And I do remember earlier it being like the Beetlejuice scene where they're all like in the underworld and the bureaucrats are
in
there.
In the waiting room. Yeah.
That was kind of Barbara's world for a hot minute. And then it slowly changed much more into this like, oh, it's an expansive space. Which then when we meet, what's his name? Daniel, who we eventually find out. Is the boss. What a twist. Right. there's that whole plot line of his that really fascinated me is toward the end. And a lot of that scene did have to be cut because it could have been made more concise, which it was. But also, I just loved that idea of that character of Death being removed from the process of death. Like, he's now just someone that is a figurehead for the most part because all these other people are running it. And he mentions, like, at one
point...
It's
like the architect in The Matrix.
Yes, yeah. that was a ton of fun. But Death Inc. has had a long... Like, it took me 4 years of thinking about it and then, like, a weekend and a half of just writing it. And then rewriting it forever.
Right. Yeah, I think what I was just drawn to so quickly was... that construct of using a bureaucracy for the afterlife, but then the idea that everything that we do in our lives is time, especially in the modern day, like just everything's ticking, and it's not a thing, it's not real, it doesn't really exist, it's all a construct that comes from humanity needing to put things in order, and that order just creates more chaos and tension and anxiety. And so you
but
can
also
feel
is a
that.
Thing because of death, like
yes,
because
exactly.
We want to measure our lives in some way, yeah. So it's you a know. Thing measure and not life. A thing and measure we need it but we don't need it.
Well, and I love like the people who's the what's the character who's in charge of time?
Reggie's
going, you know, I don't know what year it is. Oh, you're 17 years old. No, what? No, I'm not. Like, that it just becomes this sort of craziness that adds to, the sort of the absurdity of it, but also just the heightened reality of it as well. That's just so great. And I really want to see a production of it because, the director in me.
Watch the video.
What? I could
watch,
that. Watch
the video. Which
I could
is
watch
solid.
The video. I should watch the video. But just like the timing of it, I was like, oh, my director brain was like, oh, I want to do this and this and this and this with it. And then my actor brain was like, there were two or three characters. I'm like, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to play. Yeah. That, I mean, I think that's a test, though, for any good play is, as I read it, do I want to play in this? Do I want to be in this world? Whether
is this a
that's
sandbox
acting,
I play
whether
in.
That's
yeah.
yeah, and you know, I think if you can, if you really are drawn to that, and especially if you're drawn to it in multiple ways, then that's a winner. That's a cool one. So, yeah, I dug it. I really, I had a good time. I cranked through it. I read it so fast. I read it. It's probably
it was an easy read for sure.
Probably just took an hour, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I think I most identified with Vince. Vince was my favorite.
Yes, absolutely. And took me by surprise because I was writing it, and finally when we produced it, Alejandro played Vincent. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize just how much the audience would be enamored with this character, to the point where like I had to reevaluate how I was writing this character and where they were going. But like and especially their end resolution. But like, yeah, the audience absolutely fell in love with that character.
Awesome. Especially working in service jobs. I've been a personal assistant for 16 years, and just having to be like relentlessly like on top of it and cheerful, but then no one's fucking nice to you, so it's soul crushing at the same time.
Right. And I also loved in our first production, because I think in the play I mentioned the business cards that he hands out. Mm-hmm. We had a blast making actual business cards that he'd be handing out to audiences. So much fun. I keep one in my wallet. That's what it is right there.
Oh, cool.
That's a good-looking business card.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
There's a picture of that. We'll post it on the Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll send that over. Right. But yeah, it was so much fun. But that was another thing, too, like, because writing it was one thing, and I, up until very recently, have I slowly been like, maybe I should try to direct something I wrote. Once it's been produced, I don't think I want to be the first one to direct something that's fresh, but I was not directing this piece. It was this incredible director named Monica Chavez. She directed the piece, but I was still the scenic designer, and that was so hard for me. I think I've gotten better at it. Well, also, in Fierno, I had a clear vision, but like so much of the stage direction for a scenic designer is like, it's a void.
Yeah,
it's a void.
I'm designing cubes. A void. Yeah,
bunch of cubes.
And so it was really tricky, but we eventually landed on like a bunch of filing boxes, just covering the space. And what I loved, I still think about this a lot because it's a meld between prop and set. Because I really really like exploring kinetic sets, mm-hmm. That just have a lot of energy and movement to them, whether that's actual movement or just implied. But I made these little prop robots. Basically, I put a little like RC car and took it apart and put it inside a filing box. And we had like two of them running around the stage.
That's cool.
They were adorable. They were these cutest little things. And we would have a person in the audience and someone in the booth at the Zephyrs where we held it. And they'd just be roaming around at certain moments in certain scenes. But we have the introduction scene that, you know, gets played out a couple mm-hmm. times. And playing with those little robots when everything's crumbling to the ground and everything that can go wrong is going wrong, that was a fun scene to just have them interact with the actors. And, like, I think at one point one of them is crossing the stage and an actor puts their foot on top of one of them and it just stops dead in its tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And nice. It's, like, it's Jamie. Jamie's the main character trying to, like, keep a hold of everything. She was just a ton of fun to play around with them. But, yeah.
They become characters in and of themselves, it sounds like.
Yeah, they were cute. I liked them.
It's a really good idea.
I did watch the video, which people, again, I think can watch on Zani Theatrics, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I watched the video. Besides the fact that, you know, there are a few shots where the sound sort of isn't great and you're like, oh, and so I was like referring to the script.
Yes.
Besides that, it looks really good. It was like shot really well. Like there's like some cinematography going on.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, same with the Infierno one, but it, you know, for it being like, you know, an older thing that you did in 2019 at the beginning of Zani Theatrics, I was just kind of surprised. And I was watching through it, but then you had said in your email that you had done some changes in the script. So I decided, well, I'll go through the script too. Why not? And I know listeners won't be able to engage with it in this way, but I do think you have tightened it. Improved it, and you've improved some of the character arcs specifically, Jamie.
Yes. Oh, cool.
And I think the script, like y'all, Scott, you read the script,
mm-hmm.
But the play itself, like it's the core is there, but you have obviously grown a lot since 2019. It's just obvious. You can really see it in the two pieces. Not to say I'm not talking negatively about the filmed version at all. I just was like surprised by how much you were able to grow. But you did, you know, we talked about, it's thematically very similar to Inferno. But you had said in your email that you felt like it was a bit more naive compared to Inferno. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, 100%. So it basically, you kind of nailed it on the head. I think that there's been so much. It's been really interesting because I look at looking back and looking at what I have next to write, that because I've already been working on three pieces that I'm like, this is what's coming down the pipeline inevitably. I was kind of looking back on from Death Inc. to Inferno, and I realized with the next pieces I want to write, I had kind of bookend myself. I was like, oh, this is really cool to like be aware of this moment that I was really happy about, which is the journey that my writing style has come on along, but also just exactly like I was able to go back and tighten it and make it better and clearer, and especially with the character arc, because again, I it's my crux of world building and all that. But being able to really focus in on these character arcs, which is was the focus on this. When you guys asked me, like, oh, what are the works you want to present? I knew I wanted to present Death Inc., but I also knew it was like, this is the first thing I've written. And sure. So it had to come along. And I thought it'd be cool to, like, show the growth because I don't have those next couple of works ready. But those other works are not necessarily thematically similar. Like, we're not super death or time centric. And so bringing them to the table as two works that like have their similarities and differences was really enjoyable, prior to showing
them.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of the naivety was like in just specifically Sophie's character. I think that was the biggest challenge for me that I only was able to revisit after finishing Dion. We mentioned it briefly in the Inferno one about like talking about these characters that are really I think it's really fascinating working with a very distraught character, a really destroyed character. Someone I was talking with, Alejandro, who we often collaborate and work together, was mentioning how he really didn't like Dion in Inferno. But the one thing that, like, as the initial character begins, but the only thing that is redeeming in his view about him, or the thing that gets the ball rolling, is that, like, Dion begins to have hope, which he's not who he is in the beginning. And that's all we need as an audience in that moment, in that story, to continue following, is that his journey of, okay, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I can run to that, and I have my purpose now, or my mission. So Sophie who is the most human character who has recently passed in Death Inc., and Dion are similar, but they have these very different arcs. But it was this similar idea where, like, this person's recently died and a lot has been taken from them. How do we... I don't really want to... It's not about fixing or correcting. It's about exploring and seeing where the hope is next. But also it was, and this is the part of the naivety, is being able to be honest and frank, I think, because Sophie in the previous version was very caged, which she still is in this version, but it didn't allow her to express everything she needed to. And that was not a thing from the character, rather it was a thing from me and what I wanted to talk about and what I felt I could write at the time and what I felt was like, oh, in order to best tell this, I will hide these details and it will all be implied, which is great in some stories, but it wasn't serving this character. And so Dion very much was like an exploration into being more honest with myself and seeing that honesty reflected in what he said and what we explicitly were stating and what it meant to him. And Sophie had a very roundabout way of beating around the bush where she wouldn't disclose things because I wasn't disclosing things until I realized, like, no, I think this character will benefit from my new perspective on being able to talk to the audience through these characters in a more honest way.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
Which before I was naive in thinking, like, they'll understand, which absolutely audiences do. I won't steal credit from audiences who are fantastic at picking up details, but it was a matter of I can't just do that every single time because I leave everyone who touches that character unfulfilled. Like, I leave the actor unfulfilled or having to do a lot there. I leave a director unfulfilled, and then an audience will get that too. So I'm like, it needs to start with me. And I was only able to do that after Inferno, which I thought was really exciting to revisit it then.
Because
cool. That's immediately what I did when you asked, what pieces do you have? I'm like, I gotta reread Death Inc.
Nice.
Okay, let's pivot a little bit. Death Inc. is something I think everybody should try to engage with. I think you should keep working on it and moving it forwards and getting, you know, maybe another production in the future where you can keep workshopping this. Maybe you direct it, you know, all this kind of stuff. But you also sent us some links to, it was 7 of the 12, right? Were by
it was
you.
4. Oh, yeah, 7 of the 12, seven, but it was 4 that he picked out. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So something like that, yeah. There was a, it's a, well, I'll let you describe it. This is Interrupted Frequencies. What was this and how was it born?
Yes. So in conjunction with my writing style changing, because it's very funny, I have a script that I wrote pre-lockdown stress and insanity and post. And so this script is very at odds with each other. But while this was happening, I still needed an outlet, like many of us, to create. And I had just taken a course about, like, right before everything shut down. I was lucky enough to be studying abroad in the UK and, like, learning about radio plays and the frequency of consuming radio plays over there. And so I was, like, just writing radio plays and getting really excited with the format, and I had tasked myself to write an absurdist radio play banking on, like, rhythm and sound and the breaking of that, which turned out to be one of the radio plays. But that just spun off into being, well, I can't go out and do theater, but I can be on Zoom, as we are right now. I can get a couple actors together. I can get a director together. I can have them record on their iPhones and all of us wear headphones and then start doing theater as best as we could at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we produced 12 of these. I believe I did write 7, and I think the five others were guest writers, which was so, that was such a rewarding process, because, like, I would write them, I wouldn't direct them, but I would sit in so I could, like, learn about where I needed to edit it all together and what takes the director would like. But then it was just so exhaustive to, like, listen to your own writing, which, like, you're like, oh, okay, great. And, like, we were talking earlier about it. I don't know if we were recording, but we were talking about, like, improv editing versus with a script. And, like, sometimes you're like, does this line really matter? Can I cut it and save myself the editing of that
line?
And it's like, and when you're the writer, you're like, I can make a writer's choice here. But, like, no. And then when you're editing someone else's, though, you have all these ideas to sound mix, and it was so much fun creatively, because you're looking at it with fresh eyes. But absolutely, it was mostly a thing of, like, how do we engage with the most amount of people in creating work, and trying our best to, like, have them be compensated in some way. And so I think we did, like, $20 stipends as best we could for, like, I think over, like, 60 people collaborated with us all in all, because it was a lot of actors, which was fun. It was just, like, a big project that we tried to do. Concurrently, we did a piece that I also did not share, because it's very interesting, but it's not done at all. But we were doing a bunch of Zoom theater and Zoom recordings and these, like, little 5-minute scenes. But thankfully, like, Interrupted Frequencies finished and made the light of day. And so we were able to, like, put him out there and have people enjoy him and listen to him during a time where there wasn't a lot of theater to consume. And thankfully I was watching, like, the National Theater videos, but it was just a really nice thing to return to.
So there, it's Interrupted Frequencies. People can listen to it, I'm pretty sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
also absolutely available. Yeah.
So check that out. I believe it's on the Zani Theatrics website.
Yes.
Yeah. And we listened to and read 4 of the 7 that Roddy wrote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So those 4 are a conversation between two umbrellas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which was great. Detention.
Yeah.
Or Nowhere to Go. Under the Same Stars.
Cool.
Yeah, and the fourth one was called, all of a sudden I lost it. What was
London's Seventh Son.
There you go. London's Seventh Son.
Which is a fantastic title.
Great.
Like, this is a great fucking hot title. It's like, yeah, I'm interested.
Nice.
Yeah. I really enjoyed all of them. I gotta say, out of all of them, though, I think my favorite two were...
DJ.
Okay.
Hold on. Wait, why? What? Did I do it wrong?
No, okay. You're good.
CJ. Bailey loves ranking shit. We're going to rank the four of them.
Okay.
But say what you're going to say. But if we're going to rank, we're going to need to do it now.
No, never mind.
Okay.
Ooh, let me come up.
You're not allowed to talk about it then.
What do I want
to
rank? Okay.
Got it. You got it.
Yeah.
We'll do that in a minute. Anything else? What were you going to say, Siege? What do you like about these?
Well, I just love these because I'm a huge podcast listener, and I listen to Freeform stuff, but I really fucking love radio plays scripted out with Foley and all that shit. I love it. And the thing that I love most about it, and I know I've talked about this on the pod before, but when I was a kid, my dad was listening to reruns of like an AM radio show called, it was like called Ebb and Zeb, and it was just two country dudes sitting in a general store talking to one another.
Yeah, right.
And then different dudes would like walk through the door and you'd hear the doorbell and stuff as they came through. And I guess everything is a cycle. Art is a cycle. Politics is a cycle. And I just love this coming back to of the old times. And so I listened to all 12 of them. I really dug them. And yeah, I love it. So I enjoyed them very much.
Were there any favorites of yours that weren't in these four?
No, my favorites were within these four. But I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Leave it there.
Yeah, I'll leave it there.
Yeah. I'm sorry that I interrupted you, CJ, but I really want you to I like hearing the rankings. It feels really good in my body. Scott, what was your experience listening to these?
Oh, man, it was just sort of a flashback. You know, I've gone through sort of periods as a fan and as a theater artist where I've gotten to do some cool radio plays. We did one at Sacred Fools years ago that was a Christmas one where Michael Holmes was the Foley artist and, you know, all hell breaks loose, you know, while they're recording it.
End of Killers of the Flower Moon.
End of Killers of the Flower Moon is one of the most brilliant cinematic things that I've seen in a long time. Like, that was perfect. So I've always been a fan of it. And I remember as a kid very clearly being able to listen to the Star Wars radio play. Yeah.
I've never
which
heard
is
that.
A little
Wait,
bit
what?
Different. Yeah. Yeah. They, right
this
after
exists?
The.
Oh, wow.
Soon after the. It might have been like 79 or 80. Right. Soon after the movie and before Empire, they did a big BBC radio commissioned the radio play of it. And Mark Hamill did it. I think Anthony Daniels did it. Like Harrison Ford, I don't think did it. I can't remember.
As
but I remember sitting down and
voice,
listening to that. Like, I remember, like, the local, you know, NPR station had it and sitting around
That's
one
dope.
Night, you know. Yeah, yeah. Radio is kind of magical, and we forget about it sometimes. I was watching, not to digress too much, but I was watching National Geographic has a new doc on the JFK assassination, and some of the footage that they're pulling are people in, like, they follow New York, like they're in Dallas. Most of the stuff's happening in Dallas, obviously, but they're going to the people in the streets in New York, and they're all gathered around cars with the car radio turned up, and they have the old transistor radios, and
right.
they're all trying to, they're just clumped around, and it's this sense of community and sadness and shock that's going on with it. But there's something about your mind is more active than when a TV is on. When you're listening, your focus is way different. I know mine is, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Siege has talked a lot about listening to the audio versions of plays sometimes. I've done that too. There are some plays that doesn't work, and then there are some where you're like, this really works.
A lot of the time it gives me a whole new perspective on, like,
sure.
I was like, I didn't hear the play this way when I was reading it. So to
right.
me, it can give me a new ideas.
Absolutely. I've done some radio theater. I did Antigone in Wichita for the local
theater.
Radio station, and that was really fun. I was her dad. Creon? Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds right.
I think so.
No.
That sounds right.
I don't know, whatever.
Alexa.
But I love me some radio theater. These were a blast. Obviously, I love podcasting, too. I love you guys. I love this podcast. Yeah. They like me. They don't love me, but they like me.
Oh, I see.
They like
oh, Antigone's dad is Oedipus.
No, then that's not who I was.
Oedipus and Jocasta were her parents.
Oh, it's the guy who starts with a C. Starts with a C.
That's Creon.
Yeah, I mean, that was who I was.
There you go. That was it.
That was the fucking who I was.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's Eurydice's dad.
Here
we go.
Hades Town. wait for me. So I really loved listening to these. I wasn't really prepared for what it was. I did, you know, I was sort of like, wait, what are we listening to again? Because I thought when I first clicked on the link, I thought I was about to watch little videos. I thought these were like Zoom videos. Like I thought it was going to be screens like we are right now with like people in squares, you know, doing scenes together. And then I was like, oh, it's radio plays. And I got very excited. Let's step through them real quick, and then I want to hear y'all rank them. But real quickly, let's start with A Conversation Between Two Umbrellas. Cute.
I felt like it was a mix between The Giving Tree meets The Game Unpacking from Nintendo Switch.
Ooh.
Oh, that's cute.
That's such a fun and weird game that you just brought up.
Yeah.
I liked it. It's fun.
But it, you know, it's finding out someone's life through inanimate objects.
Yeah. Two umbrellas being do you have breakdowns or do you want me to just read the little...
No, go ahead and read them, yeah.
Okay. Two umbrellas being used as intended, lifelong companions caring about their owners. The tingling feeling of lightning. And the, like, you know, this idea that these metal rods would be like, ooh, I kind of feel it. I feel the lightning coming. You know, like all mm-hmm. this. This was fun. Yeah. And what was your intention in writing this, Roddy?
I think out of the four that I brought to the table, this one I never fully got on board with. I kind of wrote this at a time where I was coming back from a funeral and I was like, I feel sad. Let me write something to feel better. And mm-hmm. I didn't, but it was a good exercise. And then I showed it to someone. They're like, oh, like explore this more. Explore like the day to day of their life. And I continued writing and seeing where these guys would go. And weeks after writing initially and having this kind of downtrodden feeling, that ending did eventually come later. And I did have a moment of catharsis then, which I really like exploring in the work. It's like, just the purging of an emotion. I think it's in Inferno. I hope it's in Death Inc. And it's in some of these where it's like there's this weight that people often carry and they find different ways of releasing it or being able to grow the strength to carry it and whatnot. But I often find that writing them out, whether I realize in the moment or later, is a great moment of catharsis for myself. And watching them play out is a whole nother level of like the endorphins coming in. Of seeing it produced. Under the same stars, A Conversation Between Two Umbrellas was kind of that. It was a simple, cute story that I think I needed to write at the time to feel better.
And then we have Under the Same Stars, which is in the desert, two strangers talk by a dimly lit campfire, wondering about their place in the world that doesn't know where to put them.
I really like, I mean,
yeah,
it's...
it was fucking great.
Yeah, it was great. I just love the whole thing of like this thing that's constantly in the news and people are constantly talking about, just seeing like just a conversation between the people that are actually experiencing it. I really enjoyed it. It was sweet and it was sad too.
Yeah, I feel like those two pieces, which is why I wanted to talk about them together, really kind of connect the gap between early writing and later writing with Inferno, because Under the Same Stars was written first and it was kind of this collection of stories that I'd heard and experiences I've heard, and I wanted to kind of put it down into writing a fictionalized sense of that experience. But often, like I've seen with some of these incredible writers I've read who are trailblazers in Latine artwork, I don't always feel like I'm 100% resonating with what's being written because I feel more of the culture clash sense of being pulled in both directions. But writing that one and then comparing it to Detention Over to Go, which I'm sure we'll touch on later about what the subtext of that is, I felt very much connected with Detention Over to Go. Like, I love Detention Over to Go just because I think it touches on an experience that I think is very applicable to my second gen experience, and I think it resonates with other people from that background. Whereas Under the Same Stars is more of it's not necessarily a direct experience, but a retelling of a story that I thought would be really important to touch upon.
Yes.
Let's get into Detention or Nowhere to Go. All right. This was I'll hold my opinion on where it ranks for me for now. But let me give you the little log line. Where do you go when the bell rings? Being the leader of a rebellion gets pretty lonely. Fight the good fight. Okay, so this is a teacher and a student who I believe is in sixth grade.
I think he's listened to it before. Faster than I have. He's young,
but he talks like he's 30. Like, yes. You know what I mean? So I couldn't remember. And my note was, my note was that he knows way too much about the school system. But in a good way. That's what's theatrical and fun about the piece, is that very early on, he's like, this shit sucks. This place sucks. I hate it. And let me tell you why. And I'm like, this is all the things I kind of wish I could go back and say to my teachers. So what was the inspiration for this one?
Yeah, so I, it was kind of in response to Under the Same Stars, which, had this, like, bittersweet kind of idea to it from a first, it's in some ways, in part, an immigration story. And so, Detention Over to Go was kind of that second gen lens that I, at the time, was slowly trying to get closer and closer to. And it was just kind of like, not that this played out, but like remembering like, oh, what would happen when I got stuck after school waiting for, you know, a parent to come pick me up, and like, because we're all juggling different things and life just can be kind of hard. So like, I wonder what just gets up to there. And then everything else I wrote was just me trying to have fun, me trying to mess around. So it was really it was this exploration piece that I really just fell in love with. But yeah.
It's like an exercise piece that I actually feel like could work for a lot of people. Like, on two levels, actually. One, for writers, I think everyone should write a piece like this. Like, go back and be like, write that dialogue between you and a teacher, right? Or something like that. But then also, I think as an audience member, I think that, like, it could read as an it might feel like an exercise more than anything to you, but I think a lot of people could read this and be like, and get it and be with it, if you know what I mean, and chew it up.
I thought it was really loaded from an acting perspective. I had a professor who used the phrase yin yang scenes. You know, you're always you're constantly pushing and pulling and rotating around each other, and avoiding the conflict, trying to instigate the conflict. So just from that point of view, it was really hot. Like, I was like, oh, like it pulled me in slowly. I was like, where's this going? And oh man, it pulled me in real, real good.
Well, and the thing that kind of hit me too was being a past educator and having a kid that is a quote unquote problem student or whatever. Like, instead of, And that's, I kind of love the turnaround for the teacher in this, because it's kind of this idea of like, instead of being mad about this kid being in this position and putting you in this position, maybe asking like, why are we in this position?
Right.
And think a little deeper on that, which I think as an artist, it's a good exercise, but also as an educator, it's a good exercise.
As a human, it's a good exercise.
Yeah. I mean, especially because educators are so motherfucking put upon these days, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I kind of was this kid. And then also at Shakespeare Youth Fest, all of my kids are kind of this kid. You know what I mean? Which makes for a great... You know,
your kids are so fucking precocious, Bailey. Like,
oh my god, yeah.
Y'all, I'm directing Richard II and Tempest right now with kids.
How about two different Shakespeares for you?
Oh, wow.
Ooh, yeah, and it's the Tempest. I have a 7-year-old playing Caliban.
Wow.
Oh, nice. I love that.
Oh, that's adorable.
But
I'm
he's
excited.
The kind of kid that would probably so tell you off like this kid. You know what I mean? Like, he's smart. He knows things I don't know. You know, he came in knowing the character better than I did. So, anyway, yeah, I agree. See, just spoke to me as an educator as well. Okay, Roddy, do you have any final say on this piece before we move to the other one?
No, I'm good. Okay.
Because we'll have more discussion surrounding the rankings, I'm sure. So I want to get to those rankings. We've done the other two, right? And we only have one left, right? London's Seventh Son?
Correct.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Just making sure. London's Seventh Son. It's an old-fashioned ghost story based on some truth and some tall tales. But which is which? Where does it begin to blur? Where does fact turn into fiction?
Yeah.
And one. Also, I feel like it's almost an expression of guilt for not having taken care of someone or something, too. I feel like that's kind of bubbling underneath as well.
Right, absolutely. Mm. And what I noticed was I just thought it was so well done. Like, as a radio play, all the effects, all the sound, like, it was it was creepy. I was in it, and I was like, ooh, what?
Well,
what's going
Umbrella,
on?
The Umbrellas has some good sound production. This one has the best sound production of the four in terms of, like, radio play, which is, when I'm listening to radio play, that's what I want. You know, I want all the sounds. I want something to be like, he walked through the door. He closed the door.
Yes.
You know, like,
especially
I literally want that
story.
Shit. Yeah, I want it all.
This was the one, correct me if I'm wrong, that you said earlier that you had told the story and then ran and rewrote it?
Oh, yeah. So there was like in this, whenever this was all going down and whatever summer that was, there was a blackout. And so we lost power. And so we got a bunch of candles and we're just in my mom and dad's room, just with my sister, and we were all just telling ghost stories, and I just, like, improvised it all, and I felt so I've never felt so proud while telling a story, like, in the moment, just, like, stunned, and then the power came back on, we rushed to my laptop, and my sister and I, we recorded, we tried to remember, like, do you remember what I said here, what I said there, and we tried to just write it down as much as possible, because it was just, like, a good old-fashioned ghost story, and I love when, like, horror and that kind of stuff bleeds into theater, and there's some great terrifying, like, suspenseful horror plays, and so I was just really excited. I remember in high school doing we did radio plays, we did The Hitchhiker, and yeah, this one, like, I think if nothing else is like an homage to just those spooky radio play stories where you get those fun sound effects. I loved it.
It had a real Neil Gaiman vibe. I don't know if you're a Neil Gaiman fan, but just in terms of the modernity mixed with the antiquity was just like, and like, where are we going?
Well,
what's this urban myth?
Inferno is very Neil Gaiman. Not in a reductive way. I'm not saying like that. It's not like you're, but like, it does have the vibes of it that I enjoy. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely.
I love the little added tidbit, too, that your sister helped you, like, get all this written down. That's
lovely. Absolutely. Yeah, she helps with, like, I think almost every single play I've worked on this far. And she's an
editor
in her own right. Yeah, oh, she's incredible. Yeah.
Older or younger?
Younger. Yeah, she's currently in UC Davis. She's studying history.
Oh, cool. Right on.
Yeah,
cool.
That's awesome.
Leah's her name. Leah.
Way to go, Leah.
Yeah, right.
Hi, Leah.
Right on, Leah.
Like, your family, it feels like, is very a part of your creative process in a lot of these things. They were very much a part of making Inferno happen. And Death Inc. especially, actually, I feel like was the one where you had the most support, right?
Oh, 100%. And that's kind of been... I mean, we're all really active people in our own right, and we all do a bunch of stuff that, like, we're excited to support one another, but, like, yeah, I don't think I would have been able to accomplish nearly as much as I would have ever wanted to without that support and that help, because, like, every fringe performance, we got to bring in the truck, and my dad owns a truck, and he's bringing it in with those giant bookshelves, and my mom's just always supporting, and, like, during little cabarets, you know, sometimes we, I think we've done it every time, actually. Yeah, we want to, like, feed the cast and before they go on. And I remember one day we were serving them pizza, and then our stage manager's like, I don't know if the cheese works well with all of their vocal, like, if that's something for singers. And sure. We told my mom, and she was like, I gotta go to the store right now. I'm grabbing my keys. I'm getting a Caesar salad. She just booked it.
Lovely.
Yeah, her name's Sandy. Sandy and Will. Like, oh,
Sandy and Will. Good on ya. God damn, that's
wonderful.
Lovely.
They're the cutest. They're amazing.
That rules. The last thing I wanted to say about London's Seventh Son is I, while listening to it, very much pictured someone on stage with a single light, just like, maybe even like, perfectly top lit or even lit from below.
Underlighting, y'all. It's spooky.
Yeah. Well, the drag queens hate it. But I think, like, but like in general, I think there's this. I saw it in my head being performed in a Spalding Gray-esque way. You know, where I was like, oh, I could see this being done in a festival of scary, you know, shorts, and someone just, and you just being there, and it being perfectly timed with sound effects and or with the sound cues and all that. I think that could be cool. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Just saying. Yeah. Maybe.
No, absolutely. I'm gonna steal this opportunity to plug something in, because I was talking with people over at the Broadwater, those amazing, wonderful people, yeah. And we have a day to perform some of the radio plays that we did.
Oh, great!
In March 29th, and London Seventh Son is one of them. And I've been like sketching out little designs because you know you got to have it versatile for all these different little snippets of things you want to do.
Sure.
But that is one of them, and I am really excited. I think I'm a little nervous because I think I'm gonna try to direct that one. We're gonna have like two or three directors. On the project, but I think that one I'm going to try to take, because I've been very hesitant to direct my own work, but I'm like, maybe we try doing a 15-minute scene.
Cool.
I just put that in my calendar. It's on Good Friday, which makes it even more spooky.
Yeah.
Is the Broadwater still a sponsor of this podcast, or did that fall apart? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. The plunge. Yeah.
The plunges, right.
I mean,
right,
at this point, they should be giving us money. I'll write a strongly worded email to to my boss and
exactly. Okay. This is the part we've all been waiting for, I feel like.
Yeah,
we haven't used this stinger in forever.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
Because we haven't had reason to in a while.
That's true.
Not since
That's true.
Euripides.
Yeah.
Euripides nuts.
Euripides nuts.
Euripides nuts, yes.
All right, guys, it's my favorite part. Sorry, Roddy. I don't know why we tainted your whole episode with
why
all this
had
shit.
To get
but
it's
no, I heard that episode, and I was like, they are going for it.
We went all the way.
Yeah.
We went
crass.
All the way.
It's crass.
It's crass. It's what you've signed up for, honestly. It's what the people want. Gets the people going. Okay. Hey, Scott.
Yeah?
Tell them what I love.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
It's
loves
true.
It.
I do. I love ranking shit. So we're going to rank the four radio plays.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Let's go for it. 4-3-2-1. You're first, Roddy. Go.
In fourth place, I've got A Conversation Between Two Umbrellas.
Okay.
In third place, I've got Under the Same Stars. In second place, I have Detention and Nowhere to Go. And in first place, I have London Seventh Son. I just love it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see how CJ feels about the ranking.
I'm about to shake shit up, y'all.
Oh, no.
In fourth place, I have London Seventh Son.
Oh, my God.
In third place, I have Detention or Nowhere to Go.
What? Is it a perfect backwards?
Second place, Under the Same Stars. And first place, Conversation Between Two Umbrellas.
It is a perfect
It's a switcheroo. It's a boom flip it, y'all.
I don't know that we've ever had that happen.
Yes, we have.
Perfectly switched? Oh, maybe. I don't know.
We've had the perfect three combinations between the three. That's true. Don't
that's
lie,
true.
Bailey.
You're right. But when there's more than three, I think it's a harder thing to happen.
Yes.
But it's very cool. Okay. Well, we'll find out if you're correct. Scott? Scott?
Well, I don't mean to be a copycat, but mine is A Conversation Between Two Umbrellas, number four.
Okay.
Number three, Under the Same Stars. Number two, Detention of Nowhere to Go. And number one is London's Seventh Son. So
copycat.
Roddy and I are on the same fucking page.
Teacher's pet.
Yeah. Kissing up to the guests again.
Okay. Interesting.
Beige.
Well, so mine's none of those.
Okay.
Number four for me is Under the Same Stars.
Okay.
Number three for me is London's Seventh Son.
Okay. Oh.
Wow. Number two for me is Convo Between Two Umbrellas. And number one for me is Detention or Nowhere to Go.
All right.
Now, this, the part of this that matters is, like, why you're ranking the way you're ranking.
Yeah.
And I will say, Bailey loves ranking shit.
You do.
But part of that is because my rankings were different when we were recording the other day than they are now.
Mine switched a tiny bit.
Just on how they lived with me and things like that. And, like, specifically London's Seventh Son, I enjoyed listening to the most in the moment. Because I listened to them back to back. I just did all four, in a row. And London's Seventh Son, I was like, that's the best one. Holy shit, that one fucking rules. And then a week went by, and what have I thought about the most? Detention one and the Umbrella one.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but they just have stuck with me in a different way. And so I'm ranking it based on that, actually. But I am being honest in saying that London's Seventh Son, during the listen, I was like, this is it. This is the one. You got to get this performing. So it's a, I want to caveat my ranking.
I think the moral of the story is none of the orders are right. It's just what's right for you.
Well, yours is wrong. But yeah, besides that.
Fucking Christ, baby.
Oh, my God.
No, yours is great because also the Umbrella one stuck with me. Like, I like that. And that was your number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see that. I totally get that. I think we all. Well, no, you two, you also put Under the Same Stars as number two, right? See,
yes,
what was your
I did.
What was that considering?
Honestly, all four, like, I enjoyed all four of them.
No, yeah,
sure.
no hate and here. We're just I just want to know like why that one.
Mine were honestly, it was just kind of like the feelings I felt after I listened to them and after I read through them. And like I said, the Umbrellas one stuck with me because I was like, what did I say? It was the Giving Tree mixed with the Switch game unpacking.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Like, I just, I don't know if y'all have read the book, The Giving Tree, but it's kind of fucking best.
Of course, yeah.
Great.
And then, Under the Same Stars, it was just another one that just, it made me feel like a lot of good and sad feelings and stuff, too. So
Under the Same Stars definitely proves Roddy's existential ability to write, like, intriguing conversation.
Yeah.
That makes me, I mean, that
what is
the
conversation I haven't been a fly on the wall for? And that is definitely one of them. And so
absolutely.
I appreciated hearing that. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, my list is correct. And that's, it's fine. It's fine. No, again,
rules,
I also, the reason mine constantly changes because I never want one to get jealous. So I want them all to have their like first place chance for a minute.
Sure.
Like, you know,
I need therapy for that, Bailey.
Well, yes.
That and many other things.
Correct. Yes, I do. I do. And I'm doing it. Okay. Is there anything you, Roddy, want to leave listeners with? Is there anything, you can plug stuff in a second, but I want you to think, What is Roddy's final word on our podcast?
Insert stinger here.
Insert stinger here. Roddy's
final
word.
Roddy's final word.
9 to 8, 7 Central.
God, it sounds like it's my final word, like ever. Like after this,
that's how this works. We kill you after this. Yeah.
Oh yes. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. We'll pick out a nice coffin. It'll be a great time.
Yeah, we pay for it.
It fits in with the theme of the shows.
There we go. Yeah,
Death
brilliant.
Inc. We are Death Inc. Actually, that's what you don't know. You've created us.
Okay. Maybe my last thing. I don't know. I think if you go and see anything that I'm working on, or if you're like asking like, what are you working on next? There'll be comedies. There'll be dramas. But like, I've kind of realized this thing that like, producing's really hard, and I tend to try to produce, I've been producing my own work, I want to produce other things, but even with that selection of, like, what you choose to produce, there's, because it's hard, because it's a hard climb, whatever you're producing, like, it's a big deal, it matters, because, like, you're presenting something, and a group of people, however many, from, like, 20 to 50 to 100 seat theater, they're all going to come and see it, and they're going to leave holding something with them. Like, you guys were just talking about these radio plays and how you were still carrying them for, like, a week. And I don't know. I just think that there's... I have full respect for people that are writing comedies. And I hope to eventually be able to allow myself to write one. But in the meantime, I just think that art and purpose, for me, are really interconnected. Hmm. And I think it's hard to want to break from that. And I don't think you always need a break from that. I think if you want to produce work that is really important to you and you think is important for others, go for it. You'll have a great time. You'll have fun. No matter what, you're going to be having fun. So, yeah.
That's right.
Pour it out.
Yeah.
I love hearing that as a producer perspective, because I've been producing for years now. And for me, it's always like, I got to get this in and this needs to be done at this date. And I need to get this person and this person's information. And I think of it as kind of like this mom admin role, as opposed to like, I am also an artist as a producer.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a good little thing to keep in my back pocket. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Now we bury me, right?
Correct. Well,
excellent.
I mean, we have to close out the pod for, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But then we'll make sure we keep recording for that part. But Scott and CJ, is there any final word you have on Roddy?
No, it's just been a delight It's been a delight to meet you and spend these past two episodes with you. I think you're fucking awesome. On top of your work, just your energy as a person and as a theater artist and as a champion for theater, I'm going to be watching you for a while. And I'm probably going to be calling you, too, because I got projects that might need set designs and that kind of thing. So it's been a pleasure.
I find myself feeling a whole lot of gratitude that we decided to do this award, because it has introduced me to, like, I mean, I've been with Fools for 15 plus years, and I'm like, I know the theater community in Los Angeles, and I fucking don't. And it's great. I am glad that this has given me the opportunity to meet people outside of my inner bubble. And, like, it's been great this last year interacting with Maddox. And now, same as Scott, I am excited to, like, continue to see your stuff and talk to you and keep up with you, Roddy. Like, this is a gift. This is a gift for us, I think.
Right. Agreed.
I agree. Roddy, we stan. You're a legend.
Yeah.
We will have you back on the pod at some point. It'd be fun to have you on to talk about a different subject.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to have you on for an artist spotlight down the road, maybe when you're producing something else. Let's all produce something together.
Yeah. Hell fucking yes.
Exciting.
Yeah, let's do that.
I'd be honored. Are you kidding me?
Do you have anything you want to plug that's coming up after this?
Do you want to do a spotlight stinger?
Well, yeah, but also just letting Roddy do his own.
March 29th with that show. I mean, it'll be on our socials. That'll all crop up more. I think one thing that, because we've talked so much about these radio plays, and something that I didn't really even talk about, and it's what I want to leave with, is the majority of the artwork built for the company, made for the company, and made for the radio plays were all actually made by Nicole Rosales. She's my cousin. She's phenomenal. And so if you scroll through, like,
keeping it in the family,
just like, I'm in love with everything that they do. And so if you check out the radio plays, you check out even our company logo, like, that was all designed by her, and it's just super cool. So yeah.
Also, y'all check out our artwork for the week. It's pretty fucking
it's
cool.
Great.
It's really great.
Good job, Bailey.
I was like, what if I just find pictures of Roddy and just take the backgrounds out and throw them into a beautiful canvas of
joy. I was dying. It's great.
That's what we did. Okay, let's spotlight some LA theater, yeah?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
LA Spotlight.
Mine is just that East-West Players just extended Spring Awakening. Go see Spring Awakening. I've been trying to get tickets for plenty of weeks and can't get them. If you want to go see it with a friend, you can't because no seats are together. No, but I think now with the extension, it's going to be a lot easier. So I'm going to try and get some ticks. One of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah,
I
would love to see East-West Players take on it.
Yeah, we should all go. Actually, we should probably just go because that show fucking rules. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I've got a holiday plug. Friend of the pod, Brittany Wheeler, is in the Pasadena Corral. And this isn't quite theater, but they do a Christmas movement every year. And this year it's December the 5th. It's a Tuesday and it'll probably start at like 7 or 7:30. Last year it was at the Pasadena Methodist Church and Brittany had a bunch of fucking solos in it and she sang the shit out of it.
Brittany Wheeler rules. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But like, I just remember going, cause like I see a lot of theater, but I don't sit down and watch like music a whole lot,
chorals.
Especially like chorales. But I was weeping for the first half hour. So like it was packed in there and it just was a good feeling. And if y'all like the holidays, it'll get
we
you
should
in
all
spirit.
Go. That yeah. sounds super fun.
I'm
also,
gonna go join me, please.
To the gay men's choir holiday.
Oh my God, yeah, I would love it.
Oh, it's
I've
a blast.
There, yeah, anyway. I've been there a few times. Yeah. It's a party.
Absolute blast.
The only thing I have is Porters of Hell Gate. Is doing All's Well That Ends Well. It just opened up this past weekend. It's playing at the Broadwater Black Box. They're doing off nights in addition to Saturday and Sunday matinees. They're doing like random Wednesdays and random Tuesdays. So check out Porters of Hellgate. They're doing a very large cast in a black box space at the Broadwater. But what I've seen of it so far peeking in is so cool. They do great work. And I haven't ever seen All's Well That Ends Well ever on stage.
Oh,
I've read it. I've seen clips of it. I've, done scene work, but I've never seen a full production. So
it's not done that often.
Yeah.
Like, I always get it confused with the plot of Love's Labor's Lost.
Yeah. I can see that. But we should all go.
Okay.
I can go. Yeah. Okay. That's all I got.
I have one.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I'll throw my hat in the ring. So I recently just went out to go see Coin and Ghost's Mama Mama, Can't You See? They just had their opening weekend. They're also some wonderful people I met at Fringe. And I think one of the taglines or one of the kind of selling points from their show, something to take away from it, was like, it's not a veteran story, it's but how to tell a veteran story. Oh my God, wonderfully directed, incredibly acted, like just such a cool, hyper theatrical idea. And like, you feel all the feels and it's just eye candy. It's incredible. It's so good in the best way possible. It's just amazing. Awesome. Check it out.
That rules.
Yeah.
Go see theater. Everyone.
Yes. It's
thank you
time,
all so much for joining us for this incredible mini series covering the works of Roddy Viegas. Roddy, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. Guys. Really nice to meet you.
You're a goddamn delight.
Oh. Goddamn delight.
God damn it.
I can change that to my bio. A goddamn delight.
Goddamn
that's all
delight.
You need.
God damn it.
And then quote
theater,
CJ.
Theater podcast. Yeah. CJ Merriman podcast.
So next week, come back and join us for a CJ pick. What is it, Siege?
We're going to watch the Irving Berlin movie, White Christmas, with Bing Crosby.
Bing.
Bang.
I can't wait to watch that with the two of you.
Yeah. The successful so search engine Bing.
Yes. That would actually be interesting.
It would be interesting. I don't know how I feel about that movie. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but I've seen it on stage multiple times since then, and I always hate it.
And so I've never seen it on stage, ever. Okay. I've only seen the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I sang Sisters at a talent show in second grade, but I'll tell that story.
Nice.
I've got a sister story as well.
Well. Mine's better.
I'm sure, yes. We've proven that you are correct
garters.
And I am incorrect.
You're incorrect. My list is correct. No. Okay. We'll see you later, Siege.
Do y'all have questions or comments?
Oh, and then problem plays, and then that's all. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Do y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via email, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you so much, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson. He writes our theme song. Our theme song's way better than your fucking theme song could ever be.
So, first of all, Roddy's theme song is awesome. Have you heard it?
I have a theme song?
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes,
Roddy's here.
And I think that's better than our theme song.
I remember that now, yeah.
Okay. You were saying Scott.
Oh, and then, I don't know. And then finally to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes, and she don't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer or a cocktail of some sort.
That is, but sounds good.
Yeah.
Roddy, what's your favorite musical?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Ghost Quartet. It's a song cycle.
Ghost Quartet?
I like it a lot. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. I like that. I don't know any songs from it. What's another musical you like?
Maybe I should just pick more obscure things. I think Comet from 1812, keeping in the same.
But yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah, Dave Malloy. Okay, you know what?
I know it. I don't know any songs. Yeah. Really.
It's a big cast, you know?
Sure.
Hadestown. Hadestown's always incredible.
Wait for me. I'm coming. Wait.
See the anger behind Bailey's eyes.
Coming with you. Wait for me. I'm coming. Boom.
Yeah, what a good show.
Wow, Rachel Chavkin, better watch out. That was amazing.
Well, I'm going to steal all their parts. That's one of the best shows I've seen in LA was that tour, that first tour that came through.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Anyway, let's get out of here.
Yeah, later, everybody.
The theater, the theater.
Theater.